Welcome to How'd You Think of That with Temple Grandin.
Hi, I'm Temple Grandin, professor of animal science at Colorado State University. I work in animal behavior, also designing lots of equipment for livestock.
I'm your co-host, Sherry Quinn, North America's first vertical hydroponic greenhouse that grows both vegetables and people's abilities is located in the city of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Temple talks to founder Nona Yahia. She pioneered a way to feed an entire community with fresh produce, while also providing employment for neurodivergent individuals and people with physical disabilities.
Food is the ultimate connector, and it will be the defining issue of the 21st century, and we need to talk about it, and we need to innovate around it, and we need to be problem solvers.
Along with co-founder Caroline Croft Este, Nona Yahia conceived the company based on her own experiences. It led to her recognition as a CNN champion of change and vertical harvest inclusion on Fast Company's World Changing Ideas list, and as a finalist for their Best Places to Work for Innovators, Diverse Innovators Award.
You are a hero of many people that I work with, so well, this is a real honor.
I understand that you have a lot of people working in your company that are autistic.
Yes, I do, and you are a hero of mine as well. So,
what kind of jobs are they doing?
All sorts of jobs. Across the board. So we are indoor farmers. We are
vertical farmers. Yeah.
So we have jobs that range from being facilities engineers to microgreen farmers to tomato farmers to being involved in marketing. And so we really base our work on customized employment, tailoring the individual to the job and the job to the individual.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's been a real, really wonderful journey.
Nona explains that the idea for Vertical Harvest started in 2008.
It was a time much like this one, where we were looking at ways to improve the sustainability of our community. And I met a woman who was thinking about how she could bolster the local food economy at scale. And I'm an architect by trade and had some ideas. So we came together to think about how we could do this best. And so it really started about 12 years ago, the idea, but we've been running the farm for 7 years now.
What percentage of your employees would be autistic?
In terms of autism, I don't know specifically. In terms of neurodiversity, we have 50% of our employees identify with a disability and 50% don't. But what we like to say is that we really focus on ability. So we're tailoring and exposing people's abilities.
Well, that's good. Well, and some people would be really good at engineering and others would have to do more simpler jobs.
Exactly.
It's really important that they're done correctly.
And, you know, that is, I think, what we have learned is by employing people with disabilities, that historically what the barrier to employment has been training. And so, you know, businesses that invest in training, it can be expensive, but once, you know, you build a culture based on the individual and ability and customized employment, it's an incredibly strong culture. And so that allows us to actually save money in the long run because, you know, employee transience is the most expensive thing, you know, to retrain somebody
on
average.
Very, very expensive. A lot of industries have lots of turnover.
Exactly. So this is so what we've really done is create a culture through embracing diversity in thought. I think what's really cool is, you know, thinking about where we started the company. Necessity is the mother of invention. And this is Temple is a hero of ours for many reasons. But, you know, her systems thinking to innovate, right, is something that each one of us really truly believe in. And so, you know, I think that what we've done is in the fastest growing industry in agriculture, we've created an opportunity through food, through farming, to create career development and opportunities for people who identify with disabilities. So as you said before, Vertical Harvest, they were, you know, washing dishes, cleaning hotel rooms. We all have to start somewhere. The difference is there wasn't the opportunity to grow into what's meaningful to you and me, right? Meaningful, rewarding work, and to innovate, right? To use your abilities to problem solve. And I think that I have a brother with disabilities, and I think from a very young age, I understood that my parents couldn't give him the same opportunities as I had in schooling. We did a good job when it came for employment. You know, our family was on our own, and it was like falling off a cliff. Yeah. And so in our company, we put this idea of growing food and futures together. And now our employees are not only contributing the most meaningful commodity to any community, healthy, nutritious food, but they're leading the charge in technology and innovation in building a sustainable way of farming.
The Vertical Harvest Farm is in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, a place known for majestic mountains and frigid winters that last 8 months long, a challenge for farmers.
And so it was really built to grow as much food as possible within the downtown core. So on a tenth of an acre, we grow the equivalent of 10 acres worth of food all year round. And we do that by maximizing growing area.
You grow lettuce and tomatoes. Do you grow other things?
Yes. Well, so we grow lots of different kinds of lettuce. So we grow head lettuce. We grow petite greens, which is basically baby greens that are packed with nutrients. And what's really exciting to me is that we grow microgreens, which are greens that are really right after they sprout their first leaf. So we grow micro radish, micro arugula, micro wasabi. And if you've ever watched the movie, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, it is kind of the Willy Wonka. It is the Willy Wonka part of our farm because the taste is phenomenal. And what's really exciting is that it packs 40 times the nutritional equivalent of their adult counterpart, a really healthy product within a very tiny package. So they're really exciting.
Well, that's just great. So you've been doing this 7 years.
Yes.
And one of the things I was wondering, like you have different chambers for different, you know, like rooms in this. I've seen these kind of facilities before. Each year, do you rotate the crops you do in the different chambers? So you they don't, in case something got started in there?
Growing a tomato is much different than growing lettuces.
Okay.
So with the tomatoes, the life cycle of a tomato is about 9 months.
Okay.
So we do what we call interplanting. So we'll grow the baby plants alongside the older plants. And, you know, these plants can grow up to 40 feet tall. They're giants. They're really beautiful.
The tomato plants can go up to 40 feet tall.
Yes.
So normally wouldn't.
And so we use a process called leaning and lowering, which the Dutch are really experts at. And so we use that to grow our tomatoes within a very small footprint. You know, so growing tomatoes is kind of like an art. So you need a totally different skill set to read the plant and to understand if it's healthy or it's not. But lettuce is more like a science, right? So you can grow lettuce very quickly. We grow from seed to finish our head lettuce within 7 weeks, but our microgreens can grow anywhere from 7 to 21 days. So we have very different systems that adapt to the different crops that we grow. And in our new farms, as we scale across the country, our Jackson farm has been our research and development facility, which I would love to show you around. We are focusing on leafy greens and the microgreens that all use the same system so we can be very productive.
Now, one of the things I've wondered about, and I want to advantage you have in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, since you have so much winter, natural pests of these plants probably get killed off.
We are the worst perpetrators of pests for plants, right? We bring them in, and in the winter, you're right, it's better. But what we do is we use a technique called integrated pest management, which is IPM. And it's kind of the Star Wars of pest management. So you have microscopic bugs that are patrolling, looking for the pests that are dangerous to the crops. So we use that system to really stave off any pestilence. But if we need to, we'll spot spray. But we are the worst perpetrators of the pests.
In other words, you basically have to have really good biosecurity to not bring pests in.
Exactly. And then if they do, we have bug-on-bug warfare, which is really quite effective.
So you bring in the natural enemies of that.
Exactly. It's all about ecosystems, which is something that you understand very well.
I've wondered, about a lot of this equipment. I've done a lot of work with equipment in the meat industry. And when you bring equipment into the shop and you take it apart, you see black gunk in there inside the hollow leg of a piece of equipment and stuff in crevices. You thought you had it clean. You take your stuff apart in the shop, you're going to find out that it's almost impossible to completely clean it.
That is something that we experience on a day-to-day basis. So as the technology advances and our methods advance, we get better at it, but it's an iterative process. As you know, it's all by doing, right? You learn through doing.
Well,
and
that's
I think
right.
That is critical to being inclusive, right?
So basically, you have to, if a pest problem gets started, you got to do something about it, like right away.
And we all learn by doing. This is a new industry. It's kind of
I know
way,
it is.
Yeah. And it's the way you innovated. And there's no playbook, right?
Well, the other thing you probably do is, you'd have like more than one room in this place. So you construct it in such a way that if something, some disease got in there, you can keep it to one room in the facility.
100%. And we have experimented with all sorts of different types of growing systems and techniques, from lighting to the IPM that I was talking about. And you know what's, I think, really rewarding is when, I was developing the idea for this with my team, a lot of people said, well, it's so new, so why don't you build the farm first and then bring in people with different abilities once you know what you're doing? And I put my foot down and said, no, we do this together or we don't do it. And I'm so glad that I made that stance, because it's through action and experimenting and making sure that, everybody and their different kind of ways of thinking are applied to the solution
That's right.
We are where we are today.
No, that's really good.
Yeah, I think that's the thing I'm most proud of.
Well, you see, that probably made one of the most innovative things that you did.
I think so, too.
Also, people on the autism spectrum are really meticulous about detail, and following all the details matters.
100%. And we have found that time and time again. And it has proven, again, to contribute to a very, very healthy and exciting culture that we've built in our farm. And I think it's, there are a lot of other vertical farms, but I think ours is really unique because of the diversity in thought and skill sets that we have put together.
Well, the other thing is, one thing I always get worried about is disease. Have the other farms been doing as good a job as you've been doing on keeping various diseases out?
Well, Temple, in a growing industry, a lot of people don't embrace transparency. So we try to be as transparent as we can so that people can learn from not only our successes, but our failings.
Yeah,
I'm afraid that that's not something that's very common in the industry. So I can't answer that question with great confidence, but I am sure that they have struggled with it, because—
Well, what I have found is the people that are the most secretive, the secret is they're obsolete and that their stuff isn't that good. And the people that are more open, you stay ahead. You stay ahead by staying ahead. Yeah, you might have something under development. I wouldn't tell other people about something under development. But once you start using something, what I have found from all the years of being in the meat industry, and I think this sort of communication thing in any food industry is similar, is the people that are more open, they stay ahead. People get so worried about protecting some obsolete junk they have. I'll never forget a plant I went to. This was back in the early 90s. I had to sign like 3 NDAs. I actually had to give all the drawings back, all the as-built drawings back. There was a worthless pile of junk in that plant. And I don't think they had any idea what pile of junk it was.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more, Temple.
The secret is, it's obsolete.
I think that transparency has been one of the keys to our success.
And that's really good, because the thing that, you read about wheat rust going through, monocultures of wheat and stuff like that, just regular conventional crops.
Well, I think without transparency, it's really hard to learn. And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well,
it's
yeah,
about
you can't learn. People that share information learn.
And innovate.
And innovate. That's right.
And that's the key.
There's always better ways to do things. And I
exactly.
think one of the things that ought to be shared a lot is how you're working with the people with disabilities and making that part of it successful.
If we weren't growing both food and futures and just growing food, I think I'd be happily working as an architect, continuing to design. But that's why
And what would
I'm
you be designing if you were working as an architect?
Well, I still work as an architect, and we're designing our future farms because it's a continuous process of improving them,
right?
So that's number one. But we have a firm that works upon the principle that we call designed in everything. We believe that design and problem solving is how, what makes the world tick, right? So you can rethink everything, which you have, right? The systems that make the different industries tick. So we've worked with bakeries, we've worked with restaurants, we've worked with clothing stores to really work with their brand and see how we can improve their image and their architectural space. But we also do that with houses. We see houses as being landscapes and performative in their own right. So architecture is what, the air that I live and breathe, but it's just the profession that allowed for that kind of problem solving, which is, I think, at heart what architects are. And I fell in love with architecture, Temple, because I saw architecture as a vehicle for change, right? Which is what the way you use design as well,
right? That's right.
And it can be powerful when used right. And so once I realized that, I could never look back.
I'm wondering if you see yourself as a visual thinker like Temple is. Did you visualize this farm?
Well, knowing what I know from Temple's story, I am not as powerful as a visual thinker as she is. But I do work through problems visually. I understand space, right? I understand when someone explains a space to me, or if I can explain a space to someone, that comes very easily to me. And I think I've always been a systems geek. Right? Understanding relational space, how things work together.
Are you good at mathematics?
I'd say I'm exceedingly proficient at mathematics.
Which I'm not. I'm like in my book, Visual Thinking, I talk about different kinds of thinking, and you sound more like a visual spatial thinker in space that's more mathematical. See, I think in absolute pictures. I see pictures of very specific things. And one of the things that's always worried me about the vertical farming industry is the fact the equipment will be totally impossible to completely clean. And I know that from stuff we've taken apart in shops. What they've had to do in food processing equipment is, instead of having a hollow leg on a piece of equipment, now they make it solid metal is too expensive, they have a hollow plastic leg maybe, or a hollow metal roller on a food conveyor. They now have a solid plastic roller. And we learned that, because I can never forget, in the early 90s in the shop taking this stuff apart. And I don't want to smell or see the stuff, black crud that was inside this when we took it apart. And this is something, in looking at this industry, you're going to think about when you take some of your old equipment, you take it in the shop, tear it apart, metal legs, metal tubing legs, like what kind of crud's inside there. This is something that I kind of worry about. Now, one of the ways to prevent some of that problem is to have plants that don't share pathogens rotate every year with plants that don't share the same nasties, either bacteria, bugs, fungi, whatever.
Well, I think what you're describing is, what we're engaged in the process every day is, how do we do things better? How do we learn from what we've done before? So the farm, we're building a new farm outside of Portland, Maine. that is now almost 13 times the size of our original farm. And so we are taking all of the successes and the failures from how many times we touched the food to our pest management, to our cleaning SOPs and improving them. And I think that's where double being an architect comes into this journey. You know, I think that being an entrepreneur, understanding design thinking and improvement, understanding that your solution that you have currently is not the best one, that you can always improve.
Like my approach would be to get onto the scientific databases. And because vertical farming now has been around for a little while, and looking at some of this possible disease things. Seattle's not as cold as Jackson Hole. Jackson Hole might be an ideal place. 8 months out of the year, the nasties just get frozen to death. But let's say you do it down in Florida. And we're getting more and more tropical diseases coming into the U.S. now as parts of the U.S. get warmed up. But this is something we'll want to prevent having a catastrophic failure where some disease gets in there and just goes through the whole facility.
Well, I think one of the ways that we address that is by limiting touches, right? So we try to, you know, the intersection between people and automation is something that we take very seriously. And so limit the touches of food as we go. And then you're right. Yeah. Right now, as we're learning, we're staying north. We're not going to the Southern Hemisphere.
Well, this is the thing I'm wondering. If you go south, you look at the tropical disease stuff, we're getting some tropical diseases now that we did not have before.
Right.
And look at how things spread. Okay. I'm also very much an associative thinker. Let's look at a disease like heartworm in dogs. I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts area, and we never even heard of heartworm in dogs. Right. Now, one of the things that spread it around is people have like been shipping dogs all over the place. Now we have heartworm everywhere.
Right.
When it used to just be southern thing.
Well, I think what you're explaining is being ahead of the vulnerabilities within the system, thinking ahead and understanding what are the questions that we have to answer. And I mean, I couldn't be more with you. I think that the solution is open source sharing of information.
Well, I think the good thing that's happening in science, I just was reading about a fascinating paper on dog genetics, and I went and I looked up the journal article. It was behind a paywall, but their rough draft of the paper, it was on a preprint server. So, of course, I went to that. There's a big push now towards more open. Now, it hasn't been peer reviewed, but it's still, you know, the main paper. And a lot of people aren't going to be able to afford $35 to buy that paper. And I'm just using that as an example of getting into the literature.
Well, I think that what you're talking about, too, and speaking about genetics and your reference to animals, I mean, you know, one of the things that has not been explored, and you're completely spot on, is creating seeds and types of crops specifically for indoor farming. What we've been using are seeds and crops for outdoor farming.
Yeah, that's right.
And adapting them to the indoor techniques. And so I think that this is where the industry is going to go. And I think there's going to be a lot of consolidation in the next 5 years as some of our competitor farms hit some headwinds and really suffer
you
from
say that. They hit some headwinds. That's very abstract. Like yes. What kind of problems? You see, I'm totally non-abstract in my thing. You said they hit some headwinds.
Yeah.
What kind of headwinds?
Well, I think that a lot of our competitor farms, they've looked at it as developing the growing system technology. And what some of us have done is really focus on systems integration, right? Saying, okay, what is the best technology throughout the field? Like you're talking about doing research to pull everything together. And instead of being very, very laser focused on one type of technology, understanding how to pull it all together and integrate.
That makes total sense, because one problem we've had in regular agriculture for plants and for animals is to just breed for grow, 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 grow. I like to look at genetic selection sort of like a national budget. If you put the entire national budget into the economy, okay, grow really fast, then you get that romaine where all the green stuff's been bred out of it because it's just been bred to grow. Then the next thing's infrastructure, which in animals would be skeleton, heart, lungs. And then you have the immune system, the military. So if I put everything into the economy, I'm going to shortchange the infrastructure and the military. because everything takes energy. And the mistake that's been made in a lot of crops and animals is just going for the production. Exactly. And not enough infrastructure and not enough, maybe immune function to fight off diseases. And
well, I think what you're talking about is holistic thinking.
That's right.
You know, and I think farmers are holistic thinkers, or at least, 100 years ago they were, right?
And the problem right now is you've got economic incentives that unfortunately motivate the wrong thing in some cases.
I would agree. And I think the opportunity, and I love the word infrastructure, Temple. It's one of my favorites. And I think that, one of the things that we understand is that climate change isn't just an environmental issue,
yeah,
right? It's a social justice issue. It's a public health issue. It's an economic resiliency issue. And a farm can address all of these, but you have to think holistically. And that's, from the beginning, we said, how can food solve more than one problem? How can we address multiple problems at once? And that drove us to think holistically, but we still have a long way to go. I think the genetics issue that you're talking about is a big one, right? Profitability, making sure that we are able to adapt to the market needs. But for us, it's all about availability, accessibility, and affordability. And so when you put those things together, you have to create a system that works in order to make money, employ people, and get food to the people who need it most.
That's
and
right.
I think that has been what has driven our innovation and driven our ways of looking at things. And I think that not many businesses are able to do that, but that's something that we've, because it's hard, and we have incorporated that from the very beginning.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful. You're more of the visual, spatial, more mathematical. You're thinking of whole systems. I make concepts with specific examples. Okay, I can remember, for example, when the romaine lettuce first became popular, it was bright green. And now it's light green because it's growing so fast, you bred all the nutrition out of it probably because they were just going for the economy.
Also, most, 92% of all lettuce that we eat is imported from California or Arizona. So it's sat on a truck for 5 to 7 weeks before it gets to any of our plates. So by the time it gets there, it's lost its color, it's lost its taste, it's lost its nutritional value. So because we've centralized, what we call the salad bowl, we've created a system that's not only vulnerable, it's not resilient, and it delivers a not as good of a product.
The thing about big supply chains is that they're very efficient, very cost effective. But when they break, you are in trouble. And if you have a more distributed supply chain, it's going to be more expensive. But when you break one of the smaller suppliers, you still have supply. And then that's a basic fact, no matter what it is. I mean, having a way to grow these things in the city is really a good thing, because then you aren't shipping it across the country.
Yeah, I think that our way of looking at it is sustainable communities are successful ones. So how can we make our communities more sustainable and an investment in local?
Well, I think people are getting really interested in local. I think COVID really scared people on supply chain issues.
And it's not like we're going to replace traditional agriculture, but we can innovate to supplement it, right? And to make sure that we're filling gaps with our way of farming.
Well, absolutely. No, and you do it. The other thing I found, it's often better to sell your own product rather than bashing a competition. Just talk about the virtues of your product. It's local. You're supporting local jobs. You're putting out a really good product.
Nona says Vertical Harvest distributes food to grocery stores, restaurants, hospitals, schools, and a variety of other institutions and organizations within 50 to 100 miles of Jackson Hole. She says the plan is to build a minimum of 10 farms in U.S. cities within the next 5 years.
And our new farms can grow over 2 million pounds of produce for a community year round. So we're really pushing the system and the limits of and the demand for local food.
Well, the other thing is don't expand faster than your rate of being able to train managers and employees. I've seen companies really get into trouble with that.
I think that's an excellent point and something that we're laser focused on.
I've seen a lot of industries. When they're rapidly expanding, it provides tremendous opportunity for employees. But then I've also seen things expand so fast, they could not manage it. The other thing that I've seen with a lot of things when there was a big expansion is the oversight. You know, who's getting out and seeing how these other farms are doing.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons we haven't pursued the franchise model, right? So we have Vertical Harvest, the parent company, who will be in charge of training each of our successive farms. And so it's not like making French fries, right? It's not a recipe that we can just repeat over and over and over. This takes real skills to nurture not only how you grow the food, but how you grow the people who grow the food.
And the other thing I've watched company like, you know, they got a real management mess, a lot of sloppy stuff going on in the restaurants. And they thought that things like their own internet would solve the problem, or all different kitchen equipment would solve the problem. The problem was bad management. So the next CEO came in and started just visiting places and going, well, your bathroom's dirty. All right. Sometimes you just got to get back to basics.
Well, also, you know, I think we talked a lot about culture. Trust is how you build culture, right? And you have to be present in order to build trust, and you need to have things that work, and you need to be able to do what you say.
That's right. You have to, whatever your claims are. And I do a lot of consulting with businesses on animal welfare. And I said, whatever you have on your label, you've got to be doing it. Now I'm seeing a egg carton. This was maybe 10 years ago. It had a picture of a chicken on it on a pasture, and it said cage-free eggs. And I called up the supply chain manager for the egg supplier. I won't say where it was. That's confidential. But it was a natural, you know, high-end kind of market. And I called up the head of supply chain management, and I said, those chickens are cage-free, but they're not on pasture. So why do you have an egg carton that shows chickens grazing? You know what? Those egg cartons need to disappear and go away, because that's implying something is not true.
One of the headwinds that I was talking about, abstract headwinds, a lot of these farms have made some pretty grandiose promises, right?
Like what kind of promises?
Well, in terms of the, you know, the environmental aspects of what we're doing, in terms of the jobs that they're providing, in terms
of don't ever oversell a job. I learned that very early in my career. It's better to undersell and then exceed it. Like when I go to the oil change place, they used to say, well, it will take 40 minutes to change the oil. And then they do it in 20 and I'm happy.
Exactly.
You see, now again, I'm thinking of a specific example right there.
Under promise, over deliver.
And don't make claims. You know, there's certain claims. Yes, you can make it's local food. You're supporting local jobs. That you can make that claim just fine. But I've learned to be, you know, conservative about claims.
I think that's great advice. And I think that's something that this industry, in order for it to turn into a movement, which it needs to be very responsible with its claims. And I think that is something that Vertical Harvest really tries to do. And we think long and hard before we put something out to the world to make sure. And we know as we grow, that's going to become even more important.
Well, the other thing I have seen, you get some manager that's got a big ego. I call them the plant wreckers. And I've been on jobs with them. They want to build something in about a job that would take 8 months to build, try to do it in 3. And they won't listen to anybody. How about somebody build a meat plant without enough wastewater treatment? And they were told it did not have enough wastewater treatment. And they did it anyway, and the town shut it down. How could you make a mistake like that? Well, ego and extremely, extremely abstract thinking. The guy came out of sales, total language-based yakety-yak, and all us visual thinkers down in the shop are going, oh, no, 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 this is not going to work. You want to, you know, expand, but don't make claims you can't substantiate. You can say local jobs and give a reasonable estimate of the jobs. Now, what about nutrient runoff? Where are you at on that?
One of the ways that we perform well, and one of the claims that we can make, is that we recirculate 90% of our water. So we clean it and then we add nutrients to it and we recirculate it. So we're very efficient in terms of the nutrient runoff.
So, I mean, regular crops, you got lots of nitrates and lots of N going into the waterways.
We're incredibly efficient with that because of the way that we clean the water internally within our system and then recirculate it.
Okay, then you can make a claim. I'm very interested in you know, what you're doing, also helping people with various disabilities. I think that's really good. And we have to make sure as we expand, we don't get into something where someone could accuse you of exploiting people with disabilities, like this chicken plant example. And the jobs weren't what was exploited. What was exploited was they were living in absolutely disgusting housing, which is totally not acceptable.
Well, the way that we develop holistic thinking within the business is also the way that Caroline Croft Este, my co-founder, who developed the GrowWell model, looks at the whole person. She looks at where our employees live, how we can advocate in that respect. You know, what are the systems that make that employee successful and how we can
make... the employee can, you know, do a job that, like I tell people that work with autistic people on employment, there are some individuals where bagging groceries is a suitable career for the rest of their life. There's other individuals where it's a suitable training job for one summer, and people don't make that differentiation.
We all have to start somewhere. The difference is that people with disabilities often don't have career development when they want it.
No, they don't. You know, it'd grow a little more slowly. Then you start a farm, and then you're the suit. You better get out of the office and inspect some stuff. Don't delegate at all.
You can hold me to it, Temple. No one's ever called me the suit before, so that's a good that's a good one.
Or don't turn into a suit then. Well, better get going. My phone's been texting in my pocket. Better
all go. Right. Well, I have enjoyed this. I have enjoyed this so much. Thank you, Temple, for taking the time.
Well, it's been good to talk to you.
That was guest Nona Yahia and Temple Grandin. Thanks for listening. I'm Sherry Quinn.
You can hear episodes at stem.utah.gov/podcast. How'd You Think of That is a production of the STEM Action Center in partnership with SQ Productions. This podcast is based upon materials supported by the National Science Foundation under grant 174-5674.